Although the term Buddha and Christ would remind people very much of the standard religious practices and beliefs, these ceremonies are actually the hallmark of a new presence in the world of these great energies.
The Wesak full moon is known as the most powerful of all the full moons. The energy at that time pouring into the planet is quite extraordinary, and we are seeing it at this time. Now, as we move into Aquarius, we are feeling that desire to work together as groups. And what I see is that as we really wake up to this and we start giving our extraordinary individuality to be part of a group, how much more extraordinary this whole planet will become in the next 2,000 years.
Hello, this is David Minot, your host for Planetary Makeover. To take this even further, what Josephine was just talking about is more significant this very year that we are recording it, 2023, and will be for the next few years. And not only because the full moon of May is the time each year when humanity is flooded with the kind of spiritual power, love, and wisdom to help us both see and make dramatic changes in our world, but also because, in fact, right now, something else extraordinary is happening simultaneously. The Buddha foretold that in a future time of great chaos, which is clearly right now, that another great magi by the name of Maitreya would come into the world, not to save humanity, but to assist humanity with making the dramatic and much needed changes to the status quo structures that really aren't working anymore. That time has come, and that great magi, Maitreya, is here now, working quietly for change. Both Josephine and I have studied the ancient prophecies, and we're ready for this. But I really beg you to simply listen with that rarest of all faculties, an open mind, just to see if what Josephine and her interviewer, Diana Gold Holland, have to say might have a ring of truth for you. Remember that Maitreya does not want followers. He is not a religious teacher and asks everyone to follow their own paths, to follow the golden rule, and thus create a world that works for everyone. He has been expected not only by the Buddhists, but under different names by all the world's religions. The Jews expect him as the Messiah, the Hindus as either the return of Krishna or the Kalki avatar, and the Christians as the second coming of Christ, and the Muslims as the Imam Mahdi. So here we go. Welcome to Diana Gold Holland in conversation with Josephine Harrison.
Welcome indeed. This is Diana Gold Holland, and I'm welcoming you to our show, Share on the Air Radio, where we have a very special program this week, because according to many people in the know about what is called the three spring festivals, the three full moons in spring, are a very special time in the year. Esotericists claim that this is actually the high point of the spiritual year for all of humanity, which is literally the highest point of the high point of the spiritual year. So we are going to be talking about the legend and the festival of Wesak. I'm not going to clue you in on Wesak yet, because that's the topic of our whole show. So let me right away, let me start by giving the premises of our show for our listening audience who may be new to Share on the Air Radio. We contend that humanity is not alone, especially at this very difficult time of transition for the planet, that humanity is not alone, and that among us, emerging now onto the world scene, are very great teachers, perfected masters, as a matter of fact, who are great scientists, who are the most advanced spiritually of our earthly brethren, the masters of wisdom, emerging now onto the world scene, and at their head, the Lord Maitreya. Let me spell that for you, Maitreya. And the Lord Maitreya is actually the one awaited, the expected one of all the great religions. So the Christians expect him as the Christ, the Muslims as the Imam Mahdi, the Jews as the Messiah, Krishna for the Hindus, Buddha for the Buddhists. He is Maitreya Buddha, as they correctly named him, and also Krishna in the Hindu religion. He is indeed the representative of the Godhead, the love aspect of God, here on the planet at this time, and drawing in tremendous cosmic energies that are able to assist and help us. So these are our premises, and Maitreya and the Buddha both play a very, very special role at this time of the full moon of Waisak. And let me introduce my guest, Josephine Harrison, right now, and so we can get on with telling you about this wonderful time. A couple of words on Josephine Harrison, my guest. She is a longtime student of the Ageless Wisdom teachings and the author of two children's books that portray these teachings under the guise of fairy tales for all ages. Josephine is also a trained and gifted artist who has exhibited her unique form of textile collage art internationally. This is Josephine's second visit to our show. I interviewed her previously on children and a new approach to education. And today, as I mentioned, she returns to talk about the Waisak Festival, literally the high point of the spiritual year, and the legend associated with it. So, Josephine, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Diana. Lovely to be on it again. Perhaps I should start with explaining why full moons are so significant in the spiritual year. Each time there's a full moon, the light from the sun shines more brightly on the earth because of its reflective light from the moon. And that's why we also have problems sometimes with people who are unstable. It causes them to be worse at the time of the full moon. But also at that time, the full moon light can cause extraordinary good things to happen as well. The light shines on brighter on the darkness and more brightly on the light as well. So that aspect is truly important. And the spring festivals, so we are told when we read about this and when we study astrology and astronomy, that these times, these three spring festivals are when the light is the brightest.
Let me mention that these spring full moons normally happen in April, May, and June. Sometimes, you know, you get two moons in one month, etc., but most usually it's April, May, and June. Now, let's go into that, Josephine. Please explain the three festivals to us.
The spring festival is, as we can see it, illustrated in the spring and all the plants and everything coming to life at that time. So the energy, and also in the Christian, it's the most important of the Christian festivals, the risen Christ, the light of the Christ and the love of the Christ, rises up into the world again and is very potent at that time.
This is commemorated, of course, in the Christian feast of Easter, the Feast of Resurrection.
Exactly.
And this is indeed
absolutely.
It's the first of the full spring full moons. Let's talk about the second one now, Josephine, the Taurus full moon.
The Taurus full moon is the full moon of Asia, the full moon of the Buddha, and it celebrates the birth and the death of the Buddha. And the Wesak legend, which I will talk about, is part of that celebration. And the Taurus full moon is known as the most powerful of all the full moons. The energy at that time pouring into the planet is quite extraordinary. And we are seeing it at this time with the extreme things that are happening, which seem so bad, but they are waking us up to what's really needed to happen in the world. So that's the Taurus, and then the next full moon, Diana, the next one comes in June, and that is the Festival of Humanity, when the energy from the Buddha has been given to the Christ, and the Christ, then it manifests through Maitreya, the Christ, into humanity and right through until the end of the year.
Let's make it clear to our audience that although the term Buddha and Christ would remind people very much of the standard religious practices and beliefs, these ceremonies are actually the hallmark of a new presence in the world of these great energies. It's not about dogma, it's about energy, and it's not really about religion, because, as I said, Maitreya comes as the representative of all the religions and also of no religion as well. She is a world teacher, as they are known, for the coming age, the age of Aquarius. So this is not a new form of religion that anyone is trying to, quote, cram down anybody's throat. And I would like to remind you as well that our show is meant for your entertainment and your information mostly. We are not here to convert anybody to anything in any way. We simply present the information that we have as a source of very good news, as a matter of fact, to you, our listeners, if you take it on. But we do not expect you to adopt any religious attitude to this.
Yeah, for your consideration.
Yes, Josephine, I think there was a bit of a... I'm sorry, Josephine, there was a glitch on the line here. You were saying, as do I most times, that we are presenting this information for your consideration only. To find out more about this whole story, www.share-international.org. My guest today is Josephine Harrison, and we are talking about the Festival of Wesak in the Valley of Wesak, at the foot of Mount Kailash in Tibet. So, before we begin talking about it, I would have you know that there are this legend and the knowledge of this festival is not new, and it's not claimed by our show or our parent organization, Share International, seeing that Share is in sharing. Many, many, many organizations know of the legend of Wesak. And as a matter of fact, I refer you to Google. If you Google the legend of Wesak, it will come up under many, many names, and you will be able to read it yourself and recreate that very special magic. So, first of all, Josephine, why don't you tell us a bit about the significance of Mount Kailash in all of this and the Wesak Valley?
This legend happens in northeastern Tibet, about 500 miles from Lhasa to the east and in the northern foothills of the Himalayas. And there's this mountain called Mount Kailash, which is sacred to the Hindus, Buddhists, and all over Asia. And since ancient times, it's been a place of pilgrimage. And there's a large lake near the mount which pilgrims wash themselves in before they prostrate themselves round the mountain, one body length at a time. They literally lie down and ask for the cleansing of their bodies. And at the time of the Wesak, there is in fact a valley there at the foot of Mount Kailash, a bottleneck-shaped valley, which has a stream running down one side of it and grass at the base of it and then trees on the mountainside. And at the base of that valley, the pilgrims come from, like I said, all over Asia. It's a long pilgrimage, and all the monks and priests from all the monasteries and so on come there, and they bring their own water to celebrate this extraordinary happening. At the head of the valley, at the bottleneck of the valley, the northern point, there is a flat rock, and on that rock, it is said, so the legend goes, there is this crystal bowl of water. And at the actual moment of the full moon, a speck is seen in the sky, a tiny speck. All the pilgrims are at the other end of the valley. In the middle of the valley, there are the masters of wisdom, what Christians would call the saints. And gradually it comes closer and closer, and one sees this remarkable form of the Buddha with his right hand up in blessing, and his aura, which is absolutely extraordinary. And he blesses the bowl of water. And during this process of him coming as a tiny speck in the sky to start with, the masters and saints and all the beings that look after this planet have been doing a rhythmic ritual, forming triangles and stars and chanting a rhythmic sound. And the Buddha blesses the bowl of water and then gradually disappears back to Shambhala. He comes from Shambhala, the center where the will of God is known. And then the Christ who is Maitreya, the Christ who is at the head of this ancient rituals, takes the water from the bowl and hands it to each of the great beings who are there in the center of light. And then each of them, as in our communion ceremony in Christian and in other religions, each of them takes the water as a blessing and a purification for them. At the end of that happening, and the Buddha has receded back, and then what happens is all the pilgrims who have brought their water with them, and that water has been blessed as well, and the priests and so on, they all drink the water, prostrate themselves towards the rock, and then all very silently and gradually they leave the valley. And that is briefly the story of the legend of the Wesak. Some people experience it in dream state, and the others come from far and wide in Asia. I have met more than one person who has actually experienced it in a dream. Alice Bailey, who some of you may be familiar with, she experienced it in a dream state, and then 7 years later, she had the same experience, exactly the same experience of the actual happening of the legend. And C.W. Leadbeater in Masters and the Path, he employed a watercolorist to actually paint. He gave the watercolorist a description of what he saw, and the watercolorist did what he could to give that visual scene of the Wessac. There was a group from Australia which tried to do a movie of it, and they weren't allowed to. They were allowed to show the valley on the movie and the pilgrims leaving the valley, but the actual experience of the Wessac, they weren't allowed to film.
Let me fill our listeners in a little bit on that. The producer of this movie was called Albert Falzon, F-A-L-Z-O-N. If you look it up, it is possible to purchase this movie still. It was made in 1980.
Oh, good.
And yes, people, I don't know if it's still available, but it's still listed as available. If you Google that, and I think the name of it is...
I don't remember. I did get it and see
Travel to the Valley of Wessac. I have seen it. It's about an hour long, and as you say, it depicts the travel through Tibet and then the very colorful hats on the Buddhist monks and all that kind of thing. But hopefully it is still available. I think it may well be, and that's Albert Falzon, F-A-L-Z-O-N. The movie was made in 1980. I just wanted to clarify one term. You were saying, Josephine, that the Buddha recedes again and returns to Shambhala. And just for our listeners, Shambhala is an etheric, it is in the etheric plane, the planes above those solid planes that we know of as solid, liquid, and gaseous. There are four other planes of very, very subtler, extreme, you know, progressively even subtler matter, sometimes called the inner planes, most normally called the etheric planes. And there is a city called Shambhala. There are various spellings of that, so I won't give any here. Shambhala is the central, how would you say it, Josephine, our central divine government, the custodians of the plan?
Yes, the custodians of the plan. That's very good, Diana.
And at their head stands...
The center where the will of God is known.
Right. And for those who have heard the term Sanat Kumara, this is his residence in the etheric, and he is the regent, the representative of God, the highest representative of the Godhead on this planet, in incarnating the plan for this planet. So it's a very lofty place indeed. The Buddha recedes there till the time of the next ceremony, and one other interesting point about this is, according to the literature available, this ceremony from complete end, from when the Buddha is first seen as a speck and then disappears again, is 8 minutes in length.
Oh, that's good to know. Yes. Yes. And the aura is apparently that was given in the Masters and the Path. The coloring of the aura and so on in that picture apparently is the same as in ancient frescoes of the Buddha.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with the term aura, which is the etheric light surrounding our being. Today we are discussing the Festival of Waysak in the Waysak Valley. Now, one of the main things I find important about this particular high point of the year, Josephine, is that it is the opportunity for humanity to sweep forward as a group on our spiritual journey, and it's a magnetic invocation of mankind to these energies of the Buddha, and in that meeting there is a chance for us to participate into this thrust forward into a new fresh start, which at this particular moment corresponds with the beginning of the Age of Aquarius. So I think it's very exciting and very important to talk about the Age of Aquarius.
We have just come out of gradually come out of the Age of Pisces, when the energy of the constellation of Pisces has influenced the Earth and humanity since the time of Jesus. It's a rhythm of evolution that every 2,000 years the sun moves into another constellation. And Pisces, the energy of Pisces, gave humanity the great gift of individuality. We have, during this time of 2,500 or so approximate years, used that energy and become, as we evolve, extraordinarily gifted, each of us in our own right, according to our intelligence. Another aspect of this is that if you believe in reincarnation, the whole thing makes more sense, at least it does to me. So life after life we evolve, and we may have been back several times in the past 2,000 years, and there have been many civilizations as the planet has gradually evolved. And now we are moving into the Age of Aquarius. And it's helpful to be aware that the energy of this age is rather different from Pisces. It's you could describe it as the age of the group. So instead of this incredibly overdone competitive use of the energy of Pisces, which has given us this blessing of our individuality, but we seem to have taken it to extremes. Now, as we move into Aquarius, we are feeling that desire to work together as groups. And what I see is that as we really wake up to this and we start giving our extraordinary individuality to be part of a group, how much more extraordinary this whole planet will become in the next 2,000 years. When you add to that the purpose of this solar system which we're in now, the previous one was developing the intelligence of humanity, which has been quite remarkable, gone to extremes. Now, in this solar system, its destiny is to manifest the love aspect. And during the Age of Aquarius, we expect those two aspects to come together. And when we all see our responsibility, each one of us responsibility in working together to make that happen, this greed and competitiveness will die, because we will experience within ourselves the need to make sure that everybody expresses their whole individuality in a group, as a group. So the whole of life will not have this loneliness and all the other awful things that are happening today. And we see it waking up in young people now, these huge group demonstrations all over the world, and this development of the intelligence of humanity, which is bringing forth this ability to communicate with each other worldwide. And that gives people confidence that they don't feel so alone when they work towards the solving of the problems of the world and not the greed. It seems as though we are going backwards, perhaps, but when people don't wake up, the light throws itself more brightly on the darkness of what's happening and the good that's happening, and people see the contrast more, which makes them more move towards what is needed in the world today more. So it's really an extraordinary time we're living in, this beginning of another 2,000 years of energy on the planet. But we are experienced extremes and climate change and what we've done to the earth, which is our home, like our own personal home. The earth is our home too, and we need to love the earth just the same as we love having our own home. Because if the age of Aquarius should show us how the earth is the home of the whole of humanity. So when we abuse the earth, we are abusing our home and causing, the earth is also a living being. One day, we as individual souls may embrace ourselves, be responsible for a planet rather than just a little individual physical body like we think that's all we are. Mm-hmm. We're so much more.
I think we're seeing a lot of that happening already, Josephine. You know, with all of these horrible political and economic problems that are going on in the world, it's really hard to keep remaining asleep in the face of all this. And I find more and more people are reaching out to others and developing compassions. You know, even taking pure strangers into their homes, the refugees, etc., yeah, because it's simply the right thing to do. And as
absolutely,
you said, the young people today are responding to the energies, and we are even being given tools to help with this global synthesis. I view the internet as an early and very good tool for this unification. We don't need the mainstream news to be telling us anything anymore. We have cell phones. We can film it. We can shine a light on any corner of the world and things happening there. And people are becoming more and more responsible for doing that. And at the same time, we have these great teachers in our midst, these great world figures who are emerging and who, despite all of their advancement spiritually, are literally serving in these areas of disaster and great misery. They are there in person helping out and trying to ease the suffering of mankind on a very, very individual scale in that way. So it's really a very important time, and we're really lucky about this. I wanted to go into one particular aspect of this, Josephine, that our listeners may not know about, and that is the new way of coming into the approach to the Godhead that links the East and the West, the science of evocation and invocation, and how that is a transformation again from the Piscean age, the age past, to the age of Aquarius, the age of brotherhood now dawning. Tell us about the science of evocation and invocation.
Well, we evoke the higher, and we invoke the higher energies. And I think you could tell us more about that than me. You've caught me there, Diana.
Oh, okay, no problem. Let me get it started here. In the age of Pisces, or as we what we are more used to in the age of Pisces is the act of prayer. And prayer is usually a request, you know, bring me this, give me that, help me with such and such other. It is invoking the love energy. There is nothing wrong with prayer. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. But prayer invokes. It seeks to bring to us the whatever it is we're asking for. So it's basically a form of supplication. The science of evocation, linking invocation and evocation in the New Age, will be one. It operates at a different level, in that we invite in the energies of the Buddha, for example, of the world teacher, of these great beings. We invoke or invite that energy in, but at the same time, because of the different approach, we are evoking it. And that means we are drawing it to us. The energies that we are contacting in this new way respond by cosmic law to our invocation. So is that a bit of a way to start, Josephine?
Just something about the terminology you caught me out then.
That brings us to transition meditation in our last segment, which is a wonderful new practice for the New Age. So stay with us and hear about that. Done. We're going to do something a little different with the last segment, because we're going to talk about transmission meditation, and we're going to talk about the great invocation, which triggers it. And then at the end of the show, we are going to do a mini transmission, again, within the energies of the WASAC celebration. We will recite the great invocation, and then for whatever time is left, we will remain in silence and invite you to participate in this meditation. Of course, you don't have to do it, but I just want to explain that there will be a time of silence at the end of the program. It will simply fade out, go into the next program, but for that blank space, we are not gone. We are here together as a group in these great energies of the great invocation. So Josephine, let's start by talking about transmission and its role in bringing in the New Age.
Yes, meditation has increased enormously in popularity is the best word, but there's an enormous amount of interest now, not only in the East, but in the West also. And a huge number of people have their own individual meditation. A group meditation, there's more energy can go through the group than just one person. It's transmission meditation is a meditation of service. It steps down the energies that we invoke, as Diana has described, through prayer and meditation. We invoke these energies, and the masters of wisdom, the great beings overseeing us, they guide these energies as to how much can go through you. If you're in a group, much more energy can be put through you than if as an individual. And it's really necessary for us to be available as groups, just like we pray for change for something better. So as a group, the energies can be stepped down into various areas of the world by the masters. Through a group, more energy can be stepped down. If it all went to the world without a group of meditators, it could just blow a fuse, just like electricity. If you put too much electricity through the system, the fuse blows. If too much group energy comes from the master, a fuse can blow. But if there are a lot of people in a group, then more energy can go through. And this is the principle, not very well described, but this is the principle of transmission meditation. And there are groups, small groups meet in people's houses all over the world now. It's an amazing network, quite extraordinary. I think, I can't remember how many countries now, but it's quite remarkable. I've been involved with this since the 1970s, when I first heard a man by the name of Benjamin Krem speak in London. And it's just been quite extraordinary how this network has grown. And it's very easy, if you're moved in that direction, to become part of that network. I'm here in Vancouver in Canada. We have three or four small groups here that meet in people's homes every week here in Vancouver. And what we're going to do is to give you an experience of that type of group meditation using the Great Invocation, which Diana and I will say. And it invokes the light and love and will of the highest of God or divinity or whatever term you want to use.
So, Josephine, let me just hop in here with a couple of points for our readers. We talked about, you know, energy and blowing a fuse. Now, please do understand that there is no physical danger to you if you participate in transmission meditation. It is totally secure. The masters send through only as much energy as each person can safely absorb. So total safety there. The other thing is that as these energies come in, they are very powerful. And so we are asked not to direct them. We might think, oh, it's terrible what's going on in Yemen or what have you. But maybe what needs to happen in those hot spots of the world is that energy be withdrawn and not directed there. So we are asked to perform transmission as an act of service, and we simply serve as that step-down transformer, like with battery life, and let the masters send the energy to where it is most needed. And that, you know, it might be sent at some particular point to finding a cure for something. It's not necessarily all political and social problems. There might be some breakthrough in the understanding of environmental energy that could be made. So they know exactly, they are master scientists and know exactly where to direct it. We're getting close to the end of our time, and I want people to have this little experience of transmission, Josephine. So let us talk about the Great Invocation very, very quickly. The Great Invocation is recited as it's like ringing the buzzer to let the masters know that that particular group is, as always, on a regular basis, ready to transmit at such and such time and such place. So we recite the Great Invocation to invoke the energies of the masters in transmission. By cosmic law, these energies are evoked from them and come to us. So it's just like an opening buzzer to start the flow of the energy. There's more on the history of all that. You can find it out later on your own. So, Josephine, it's very hard to say it in perfect synchronicity, so I think I will let you recite the invocation for us, and then we will go into silence till the end of the show in transmission meditation.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.
visit us on Facebook at hashtag Planetary Makeover. This show has been a production of planetarymakeover.org. For more background info, visit www.shareinternationalwest.org. That's shareinternational-west.org. For related books and DVDs and CDs by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of Maitreya, the world teacher, please go to share-ecart.com. That's share-ecart.com.